Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Mile High Podcast. It is episode 363, and no Kendall today, unfortunately. Kendall is actually pre-recording for her podcast for maternity leave, so to make sure that she has content over there, she had to step away for today's episode. But fear not, I am not all alone here, because today I am joined here at the desk in Kendall's spot by the one and only Ian.
Hi, guys. Hi, everyone.
We were debating whether or not Ian should open it up, but that might be a little too shocking. But no, Ian's going to be joining me today. He's going to be kind of helping co-host the show, get his feet wet, because there'll probably be more episodes in the future. Actually, there will be for sure next week. We'll actually be just Ian and I, and then I believe Tom will be joining us because Janelle and Kendall will be at a conference for Higher Hope, so they won't be here next week. And actually, I'm going to be hosting the sesh as well. I have a busy week next
week. Whoa, you're hosting the sesh?
I'm doing the sesh. I'm doing Lights Out and Mile Higher next week, so I'm hosting all the shows. That'll be fun.
Boy takeover.
Yes, yes. It'll be a boy takeover over on the sesh. But today, Janelle is here as well.
Hey.
Of course.
Hello. It's just me all alone back here now. And Maggie.
But at least you guys got your dogs.
Ian, you left me.
I know, dude. It is, over there, you're so comfortable. Up here, it's like,
it's scarier up there.
I'm exposed right now.
Kendall sat back here for the first time on the sesh, like, a couple weeks ago when we were playing a game. And she was like, I love it back here. I want to be back here. I was like, yeah, unfortunately, we need you up there, sweetie.
Yeah, it's a totally different vibe over there for sure. Up here, you feel large and in charge.
Yeah.
On this big old desk that we have.
This desk is absolutely massive.
It is huge. This is like a news desk up here.
You know, it literally is.
And then we've got a bunch of lighting and stuff. So you feel like you're on the news.
I mean, not that this needs to be said, but like you and Kendall are genuine professionals, knowing what there's just cameras.
Yeah.
The lights.
Yeah. You get used to it over time, you know, you get used to this all being here that I just kind of forget that it's there at this point. But the one thing that does bother me is the lights. They're just like blinding to me. If it were up to me, I would do the set like Lights Out.
Yeah.
Where it's just like very dim,
dark.
But that doesn't really work that well for this show. And Kendall does not like bad lighting. So she would say no to that. But thank you so much for being here. We are covering a very, very interesting case and also a very sad case. We're going to be covering the thruple murder of Eileen Seiden. Eileen was a beautiful, beautiful individual whose life ended way too early due to two very bad, very evil individuals who I think did not get the punishment they truly deserved for what they did to Eileen. But an important case nonetheless about domestic violence, which we'll be talking more about that later on. But yeah, it's definitely a sad one, but an important one at that. So should we just go ahead and hop in there, Ian?
I think we can do it. I think we should.
So let's go back to the beginning of the story here, going all the way back to when Eileen Seiden was born. She was born in August 1986, and she was the youngest of four siblings. She was raised by her parents, Mirtha and Frank Seiden, who had become wealthy furniture manufacturers in the Miami area. So we're down in Florida today. Details are kind of sparse when it comes to her two eldest siblings, but one is completely unknown, and her older sister, Deborah, would spend over 20 years as an investigator for the Miami-Dade County Attorney's Office. Still, Eileen's other sister, Francesca, who is very important to this case, but she was 8 years older and was with her when their mother passed away from cancer. Eileen was just 9 years old at the time, and when asked how they handled their mother's death, Francesca simply said, "We didn't talk about it because it was so fast." And still, through that experience, Eileen forged a special relationship with her father, Frank, who remained close with her as she entered middle school and high school. But then when Eileen was just 14 years old, her father, Frank, died suddenly of a heart attack. And this event left Eileen as an orphan, and 22-year-old sister Francesca needed to make a big decision. She said, I signed the papers and became her legal guardian. So that's a massive blow to anybody, especially at 14 years old, to lose your mother before and then to lose your father. Both parents is really tough. You know, I can only imagine how devastating that would have been. And just, especially when you're close with your parents, that friendship and guidance, and just to have that ripped away, what do you do?
Right. Well, and I also think, like, specifically in this case, as we'll see moving forward, is like Francesca becomes like a very, very central point, not only in the story, but in Eileen's life. Like, it's kind of, she becomes her rock in many ways.
Francesca is somebody who I'm majorly inspired by, because she shows so much strength through this whole situation, because she was juggling being a sister and a parent after this. You know, she's her legal guardian. She's taking her to school. She's finishing her own school and working a job to support both of them. Francesca said this, I didn't have time to grieve, and I don't think she did either. Because they just had to get, I mean, they had to survive. They're just trying to make it. And still, Eileen's life moved on. For high school, she attended Allison Academy, which is a private school in North Miami Beach. And it was here that Eileen created friendships that would last her entire life. An unnamed friend described Eileen as a sweet, loving individual, and the two remained in contact long after high school. But this is also when she met somebody named Zachary Abel, who this individual, as we'll find out later on, would become very important for all the wrong reasons in her life. But both Eileen and Zach were the same age and came from similar backgrounds. However, according to Eileen's friend Allie, which this is just a pseudonym for her, Zach did not have the best reputation in high school. And while it's unknown whether Eileen and Zach had any sort of romantic relationship in high school, it would turn into one as the two remained in contact throughout the years. It kind of linked up years after high school, but it's kind of stayed in touch loosely. But after Eileen graduated from high school and entered her 20s, her older sister Francesca took an opportunity to move to the West Coast, over to LA, to manage her own film production company. And Eileen decided to stay back in Miami. Francesca said that it was finally after this move that Eileen began to grieve the loss of her parents. She said, Eileen started to think a lot. She became more sensitive. Eileen's friend Allie said this, something like losing your parents has long-lasting effects throughout your life, and it's obvious it did. To be that young, you can't really process fully, you know, the finality of losing your parents. And then as you know, by the time you're in your 20s, you also start kind of seeing things a little bit more from your parents' perspective. So I'm sure that's really when the grief hit hard.
Right.
Just like, oh, they're not there anymore.
And now, especially that she has to, without Francesca nearby, like, of course they stayed in contact, but she's got to figure out her own life. She's got to figure out how to manage everything, how to pay the bills, all while still dealing with this latent grief that's just kind of been rumbling inside of her.
Yeah, it's definitely no easy task. And I mean, Miami is a whole other animal on its own, just a wild, interesting place. Definitely not a cheap place to live in. You know, you've definitely got to make decent living to live anywhere within the Miami-Dade County. Eileen was determined to make it, though, in Miami on her own. Allie said that Eileen worked as a property manager and lived in a great apartment and could always pay her bills and rent on time. Allie noted that Eileen had become very independent. Francesca saw this newfound independence when Eileen stayed with her for several weeks in 2016. Still, Francesca missed her sister and offered Eileen a place to live in Los Angeles so that they could be close together. Eileen missed her sister too, but declined the offer. Francesca wished that Eileen had taken her offer because after this trip, Eileen reconnected with Zach Abel. Only this time, it was romantic. And in the years since, Zach, He definitely had not been a law-abiding citizen by any stretch of the imagination. He had racked up a pretty extensive rap sheet. In 2011, he was charged with misdemeanor battery, but the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office didn't prosecute. And in 2013, Zach was arrested in Miami and charged with two counts of felony possession of a controlled substance with intention to sell. He was also found guilty of that charge and sentenced to 4 years probation. Then around the time Eileen reconnected with Zach, there was another arrest. In October 2016, Zach was charged with the misdemeanor possession of cannabis alongside his then-girlfriend, Christina Araujo. The problem is, even though Zach would soon start dating Eileen, he never left Christina. hence the whole throuple situation coming about. So trying to piece together Zach and Christina's relationship is just kind of, it's not an easy task at all. It's very confusing what exactly their relationship was. We know that they met around 2007 and shared a house with one another in Loxahatchee. However, the early part of the relationship is described as off and on. Christina is 8 years older than Zach, which often led her to calling the shots within the relationship. And according to Zach's close friend, Mike Picavet, it was, quote, kind of weird trying to remember any good times. There just weren't. There was always some issue. So you have that dynamic, you know, which can work in a healthy relationship, someone being 8 years older. But in this particular relationship, Christina took advantage of the fact that she felt like she knew more than Zach, felt like, you know, she could control him as well. Because as we'll see, I think Christina is a manipulator.
Big time. Big time.
Amongst other things. But Mike, Zach's friend, described him as very entertaining and extroverted. Mike met Zach one night at a Florida bar called Duffy's. And according to Mike, Zach just walked straight up to him and said, "Hey, I like your shirt." And then they began talking. Christina then came up. Mike said that the moment Christina joined the conversation, she immediately began boasting about her father, Colonel Tony Araujo, who was with the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. Christina said this, "If we ever get into any trouble with the law, he can take care of it." And Mike thought to himself, what? Who says something like this? Which is very odd. I mean, I can see it happening. I feel like there are people who would say things like this right. about their family being in law enforcement. Especially, I mean, a colonel is pretty high up within the sheriff's department, so he's up there next to the sheriff. To just go around a bar saying this.
I know. And it also is like, damn, you're not thinking about your father's reputation doing this? Like, no. He's obviously a yeah. well-respected man. Right. You're saying, I can do whatever the fuck I want and get away with it because of him.
Exactly. And you're like you said, you're making your dad look like he's corrupt or something.
Right.
And he's, you know, getting people off with crimes. Like, I'm sure he really appreciated Christina doing that. Their whole relationship is interesting too, because it doesn't seem like they necessarily had the closest of relationships no. either. Because I feel like if you had respect for your dad, you wouldn't be saying shit like that. You'd
right.
be respectful and also a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't know, it also speaks to a level of immaturity. Like, to me, it also sounds a little bit like, my dad can beat up your dad, you know?
Totally,
like,
yeah. No, that's exactly, I think that's what she's doing. She's just trying to flex on people.
Straight up, yeah.
And be like, oh, I can get away. You know, that person's like, yeah, if I get a speeding ticket, I just tell them who my dad is and they just rip the ticket up.
I'm good to go.
I'm sure that doesn't actually happen. But apparently, Christina would talk about her father to just about anyone. She used this also as an intimidation tactic of like, you do anything and I'll tell my dad. I'll snitch on
I've
you
I've got
as
my
well.
Eyes on you, yeah.
I'll flex on you and I'll snitch on you at the same time. But of course, you know, if she's walking around saying this, they know that she's connected with law enforcement. So it's a power dynamic that she uses. After this first strange encounter, though, Mike began regularly hanging out with the couple. And there would soon be years of wild nights, parties, and lots of heavy drinking. Mike said that binge drinking was their go-to thing, and they were always like shots all through the night. Big shots takers. Christina and Zach started a used car business together, which sounds like a great business plan for a bunch of binge drinkers and also romantic partners. Sure, that went really well. So yeah, they start this car dealership together. And obviously, once you get into business with your spouse, as I know, things can get more complicated and it can create issues if you're not in a good relationship, right? More power, you know, dynamics going on here between Zach and Christina. And Zach's at a point where he's kind of sick of this power dynamic that Christina has over him. And he's kind of wanting out of the relationship. Because according to Mike, Zach started to feel like Christina had grown more controlling and demanding within the relationship, but he didn't feel like he could make a clean break from her and end the relationship because now they're kind of financially tied up. His source of income is through her as well, so it's not as easy to just split.
Their social lives are so closely tied through this like constant binge drinking, this constant drinking.
Right.
It's like the business is the most important thing. That's like, how do you leave someone when that's your whole social life? That's all you do is like, we go to work and then afterwards we get blackout
drink a whole
drunk.
Handle.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You never really hear about any other friends.
No.
Like good friends other no. than Mike.
Right.
It seems like they hang out with Mike and maybe a few other random people, but otherwise it's just them.
And they're just getting drunk. That's really all they're doing.
Very productive.
Very. But that's, I mean, ultimately in 2016, Mike was very surprised when Zach showed up to his boat with a new woman, Eileen Seiden. But of course, Mike knew that Zach had not broken up with Christina. Instead, he just now had two women in his life.
Which I'm sure Mike is like, this is not going to end well.
No, man.
This is not good.
He's just like, fuck, bro. Like, you have two girls. I can't say anything. Like, you need to do something about this. And so Mike asked Zach why he didn't just leave Christina for Eileen. And Zach explained that he had tried many, many times, but each time Christina threatened him. She said that she could, quote, make him disappear, which again goes back to this intimidation of it. Like, she's already sowed the seeds of, I can get away with anything because of my dad, so I can make you disappear. No sweat off my back.
Casually threatening murder.
Right.
You know, like, oh yeah, I can make you disappear because I know how to cover up a crime.
Right.
Because my daddy's a sheriff. As you can tell, I don't like Christina at all. I think she's a bad person through and through, and you're already seeing it. I mean, who says shit like that?
Right. For a year, Zach and Eileen secretly dated. Eileen's friend Allie said she seemed to love him so much that she was still hoping that he would decide to be with her. He would lead her on to think he was trying to end it with Christina, which I think also points to Zach. Again, Zach is a horrible person as well. And I think that this points to something like, maybe how hard was Zach really trying to end the relationship? You know, or did he just kind of get to a point where he was like, well, I can just see Eileen on the side and I don't have to leave Christina. You know, I think he is also playing into this a little bit because he's ultimately benefiting from having two women.
Oh, yeah. He's benefiting in multiple ways. And yeah, because how hard would it be like, Christina, I'm not going to see you or hang out with you anymore and just leave, just physically leave and not be around her anymore.
Right.
He could have done that and he didn't.
He didn't.
We live in a time where everything's continuing to get more and more expensive. Your bills, groceries, clothing, you name it. And it's more important than ever to make sure you know what's going on with your finances. Make sure you know what subscriptions you're paying for, because Lord knows there are so many subscriptions out there these days. Just in streaming alone, you can have like 8 to 10 subscriptions. Then you can count all the subscriptions on your phone. You can count all the subscriptions in your kitchen even. I mean, it's endless. So you need a way to organize them, make sure you're not paying for some that you don't need. And Rocket Money is the answer. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It also monitors your spending for you, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. I love Rocket Money. I'm a premium user of it. It's only cost me, I don't know, $4 or $5 a month. And I love it. It saves me hundreds of dollars in the past in canceling subscriptions. It's also helped me be able to lower some of my bills, including my internet bill, which was actually really cool. All I had to do was upload a copy of the bill, give Rocket Money some account information, and then they went and did the rest and were able to negotiate a lower rate, which is awesome. There's so many great features with it. You can use it for free, but then some of the premium features include monitoring your credit. You can set up custom budgets. You can also track your net worth as well, which is kind of nice. You can add investment accounts. You can add bank accounts. You name it. All to one place. You can organize it in one dashboard. Instant app you'll use every single day. I do every single morning when I wake up. Pretty much when I'm getting my day started, I pop into it, just see what expenses are coming out, what bills are coming out. It sends you alerts when bills go up in price. There's just so many great features to it that will help you save money. It's a no-brainer. You should definitely be using Rocket Money if you're not already. Rocket Money's 5 million members have saved a total of 500 million buckaroos in canceled subscriptions, with members saving up to $740 a year when they use all the app's premium features. We love that. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. It's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Go let them know we sent you at rocketmoney.com/milehigher.
In 2017, things get even more complicated. Eileen unexpectedly lost her job as a property manager, and while the reason behind this exit is unknown, it destabilized her life. She had been living on the property she worked for, so now she was out of a job and out of a place to live. Allie said she was really starting to lose control of her own life. That's why Eileen said yes when she was offered a job at Zach and Christina's car dealership. But of course, now that all three of them are working together, this hidden relationship they once had couldn't be a secret anymore, and things began to escalate. Eileen continued to pressure Zach to leave Christina, and when Zach finally mustered up the courage to do it and end it once for all, Christina shot back with an interesting proposal. She asked Zach if they could all be in a relationship together, you know, a throuple.
It's very interesting because one does not just jump into a throuple unless you really feel like that could work.
Right.
And so I question Christina's motivations behind this.
You know, from my experience, just from people I know, I definitely know people who polyamory, not necessarily like a straight up throuple, like in this case, but like introducing polyamory to a relationship, not out of a genuine like care, but out of a fear that if I don't do this, it's going to end. I'm going to lose this person. So I think that's kind of what's going through Christina's head is just like, I don't want to lose Zach because I have all this control over him, yada, yada, yada. So the only thing I can think of is like, let's just all be in a relationship together.
See how that goes.
Yeah. Now, Zach and Christina were never monogamous. They frequently dated other women throughout the relationship, though these other women wouldn't be as official as Eileen. They were all just basically hookups. You know, they come over the house. Sometimes they did mention once, like, a girl stayed for a little while, but not like this, where it's like, Eileen is in a relationship with us. So Zach pitched the idea to Eileen, and she simply said, absolutely not. There's no way, it's never going to work. And, you know, for a few weeks, there was radio silence about the relationship while Eileen was still working for them. But then, really out of nowhere, Eileen changed her mind. Allie said, I was in shock, really, but also a little bit happy for them that maybe this could work. It's important to note that the details about the actual dynamics of the relationship mainly come from Christina, so we're unsure what the truth really is. According to her, Eileen was in just as much of a relationship with her as she was with Zach, and they would go on dates or have sex without his involvement. However, other people close to them dispute this and say, like, no, she wasn't really fucking with Christina at all. So just take all of it with a grain of salt. A lot of this is coming from Christina.
Yeah.
And she obviously has her own reasons for, you know,
saying things like this, right, for sure. Yeah. I have a hard time personally believing that was all true.
Yeah.
But this relationship soon turned physically abusive, even before they were in an official throuple. Mike said that Christina and Eileen had a fist fight in his kitchen. Apparently, Eileen brought up that she had been having sex with Zach, and Christina immediately started throwing punches. After the fight calmed down, Eileen said, well, you're fat and ugly too. The dynamic seemed to be the MO of the entire relationship. One of them appeared to be the odd man out, would get jealous, and then things would spiral out of control with physical violence. Mike said the fights, though, were fueled by, guess what? Alcohol. Mike maintained that it was mainly Christine and Eileen who would fight, but other sources said Zach would abuse them too. Oftentimes, women would hide their black eyes behind large sunglasses. Mike said it was an everyday thing, which, I tend to believe Mike's statements throughout this.
Yeah.
I am a bit disappointed that Mike didn't do more to try to stop this. He just kind of sat by and watched it happen. So he could have maybe intervened a little bit more,
right.
I think,
you know, because I can understand Eileen's friends, because mainly they're all women not wanting to get in the middle of this because they're also threatened too. But Mike, I feel like similar to you, like you could have gotten, you saw these fights happen. You could have done something to stop them. But I think similar to like seeing Zach on the boat with Eileen, knowing he has another girlfriend, he's just like, no, this is my boy. I can't do anything about it, which is really disappointing.
Definitely. But Allie maintained that Zach was the primary abuser in the relationship. She said Eileen would call her and say, you have to come over here, he hurt me again. And Allie would rush over and photograph her friend for evidence. Allie always begged Eileen to go to the police, but she refused, fearing Christina's connection to law enforcement through her father. However, Francesca believed that Christina was the one who contributed to the majority of the abuse throughout the relationship, which I think is very interesting and important to remember for later on. She wanted Eileen to leave the situation, but recognized how hard it can be to leave an abusive relationship. I think we all know it's much more complicated than just, why don't you get up and leave? You know, there's control, there's power dynamics, there's real immediate danger there as well. However, the abuse only got worse once Eileen moved in with Christina and Zach at an apartment in North Miami Beach at the end of 2017. Zach's mother also lived with them. At one point, the abuse got so bad that Allie had to take Eileen to the emergency room. And once they were there, hospital workers asked where she got her bruises. But once again, she refused to say where they actually came from. Allie said, "Eileen, you have to break up with this guy. Someone's going to end up dead." In April 2018, Allie didn't realize how true that statement was. At this point, Eileen wanted out of the relationship. Allie said that her friend was going to break up with Zach and Christina before finally moving out of the house, but still she was trapped financially within the relationship and needed to find an escape. Because again, she's working kind of with them through the used car dealership. She really has no other income. They're kind of supplementing that income for her. But April 7th had started as an explosive day for the throuple. According to Christina, again, take this with a grain of salt, Zach had become enraged because he discovered Eileen was on a dating site. According to Christina, Zach threw Eileen's phone into their swimming pool. He then, quote, picked her up and body slammed her on the top floor. After abusing Eileen, Zach walked up to Christina and told her to mind her business. Christina left quickly for her cousin's baby shower in Palm Beach, and she didn't want to return because of all the fighting. Eileen reached out over text and said everything was okay, but both she and Zach were still home at this point. When Christina returned, she changed into a bathing suit and went to the pool. Then Zach joined her, attempting to kiss Christina, and because of the violence earlier in the day, Christina moved away from him. He started an argument, so Christina got out of the pool and ignored him. Zach approached her from behind and put Christina in a headlock. He then went into the bedroom and retrieved a gun before he pointed it at her. Zach's mom went outside screaming, threatening to call the police. At that point, Zach grabbed the rest of the cash they had physically, grabbed Eileen, and they left in a vehicle owned by the dealership. Eileen didn't have her cell phone since Zach had destroyed it earlier in the day. Now, Christina explained that since Zach didn't have a license and he was driving a car owned by their company, it was likely, and not to mention that he was likely under the influence of alcohol, she was concerned as a business owner. However, her texts to him paint a very different picture. In roughly 24 hours, Christina sent Zach over 150 text messages saying, quote, "You two deserve each other, along with my dad will be calling you, and you fucked me over, and now I'm fucking you over." She even told Zach that she had police issue a bolo on the vehicle. But we know this is all bullshit. This is all lies that she's telling.
And I also really don't think that these texts come across as a concerned business owner. It more or less, these are
personal
jealous lover style.
Yes, yeah, totally. It's interesting because she really thought and was concerned as a business owner that Zach had taken one of the dealership vehicles, also was driving under the influence, that she would have just called the police and reported the car.
Right.
So the police go pull him over.
And that's obviously not the case because she wants him to come back.
Right.
She doesn't want him to be in jail.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Meanwhile, Eileen called Allie on Zach's phone and told her they were getting out of the house. Allie assumed this meant a coffee shop or somewhere else they could cool off before returning home. However, instead of coming back, they just continued driving north up to Georgia. Allie said, "What are you doing, Eileen? You don't have your phone. You don't even have your wallet. This is crazy." Eileen responded, "We're going on a road trip. This is a good thing." So it makes you wonder kind of what Zach's telling her on this car ride as well, of like, "Oh, we're going to get away from her. Let's just get out of town." But it's definitely not that.
No.
As we'll see.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it speaks to the earlier part of their relationship prior to the throuple, where he would just keep leading her on, like, "No, I'm going to leave Christina, don't worry." And now, despite all of the abuse, all of the everything, they're on the road, physically distancing themselves from Christina. I can totally understand why Eileen would be like, "Thank God, like, this is what's finally going to change things for us."
And you know Zach is using Christina as an excuse for his behavior.
Absolutely.
He's like, "I just got to get away from this crazy bitch because she's making me crazy. You know, I'm drinking because of her." And I'm sure he's just feeding Eileen all this bullshit and lies to make Eileen think that he's actually a good guy. He just needs to get away from Christina and out of this throuple relationship.
Exactly.
So
both of them are terrible people. Zach and Christina are terrible. Allie also contacted Christina and Zach's mom, who at that point were searching for them at local bars, before Allie told them that they had actually left the state. Allie then asked Christina, "Why don't you just worry about your own life?" Which is a good point. Now, about 2 days into the road trip, Zach and Eileen headed into Texas. Neither of them had responded to Christina's slew of text messages, but that changed when Christina sent this, quote, "If you want to come back home, come back. you never have to question my love. For unknown reasons, or perhaps thinking that Christina may have had a change of heart, Eileen and Zach invited her to join them. Christina caught a flight and met them in Dallas, which, you know, this to me speaks again to this manipulative relationship dynamic of like, suddenly one of them acts after crazy abuse, physical or verbal, you know, they show a little bit of warmness. And then this, you know, there's a spark of hope between it, like, oh no, we can make this work. And then they just jump onto the opportunity.
Yeah. That doesn't, I don't even know, man. I'm just like, what even is going on here?
Right.
What is this relationship?
It's, I understand why.
It's just manipulation.
Right. And meanwhile, all of Eileen's friends and family are like, get the fuck
yeah.
out. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just sad. Christina said that the time spent in Texas was fun as the throuple went bar hopping and sightseeing. She said, Eileen and I were all over each other at a bar. Everybody knew we were in a relationship. It was very obvious. Again, these are Christina's words.
True, yeah.
I don't know. She has her reasons. However, Eileen's friends and family recall that time very, very differently. Eileen called Allie from Zach's phone late at night saying, this is getting bad and I don't know what to do. Allie recalled that this didn't start until after Christina joined them. By day 10 of the road trip, Francesca was getting worried too. When the throuple stopped in New Orleans, Eileen called her sister saying, I think they're gonna kill me. In New Orleans, Christina remembered getting kicked by Zach for not wanting to go out. Allie tried to get information from Eileen, such as, you know, their address, where they were staying, the license plate, anything that could help her call the police about Eileen's situation. But Eileen simply said, I can't. As the road trip stretched into its second week, the group planned to drive back home across Florida. During a stop at a hotel in Pensacola, there was a physical fight, though Christina didn't mention who was involved. It could have been all three. That certainly happened. The road trip continued along the coast on Highway 98, and they planned to stop in Panama City, but they missed their exit. They continued until they reached Apalachicola and crossed over into neighboring East Point. Once there, they stopped at the Red Pirate for food and they played mini golf. However, Eileen was going back and forth from the car using Zach's phone to contact her friends the whole time. Then, on the recommendation of a local at the Red Pirate, the throuple was told to stay at the Sportsman's Lodge Motel. They reserved the last vacancy, room 15, and woke up on April 22nd with a plan. They decided to spend another day in East Point and make it a party. They reserved two more nights at the lodge. The trio then made a morning trip to the liquor store where they purchased the largest size bottles of Fireball and vodka, which, I don't know, these are massive, massive
yeah.
handles. And for three people for 2 days.
That's a lot of alcohol.
That's a ton.
And we know this for sure because there's actual surveillance footage from the liquor store where you can see them walking up to the counter with those handles of vodka and that Fireball.
So after buying, you know, gallons of alcohol, they then went to the dollar store to get barbecue supplies and a small thank you gift for the hotel owner. It was a small glass figurine shaped like a bluebird. While barbecuing, Christina said that Zach and Eileen kept sneaking off for several private conversations. Now, rumors persist about what this conversation could have been about. Some say that it was Eileen finally breaking up with Zach. And one completely unfounded rumor stated that Eileen was pregnant and was telling Zach, though again, there's absolutely no proof of that. Zach would later say that earlier on the road trip, he proposed to Eileen using a ring pop, and these conversations could have surrounded this future marriage. Though, of course, there's absolutely no way to prove what the two actually spoke about. Regardless of the conversation, we know Eileen snuck away to speak to Allie on the phone. Whatever she was talking about with Zach had actually frightened her. According to Allie, during one of these calls, Eileen said, I need to leave him. I'm telling you, I'm like a sex slave. He has this really scary look in his eye. It's very scary. I need your help. Which again, like all of these rumors surrounding what they were talking about without Christina, I think they really don't matter when the real conversation she was sneaking off to have with her friend was one of like complete fear. So they got to work, Allie and Eileen, and they planned Eileen's escape route. The next stop on their road trip was going to be Tampa, and so from there, Eileen would sneak away from Zach and Christina and hop on a Greyhound bus to Miami. Allie actually even bought the ticket for Eileen, and Eileen made plans with other friends to get brunch. She was supposed to get back to town. Unfortunately, though, this would be the last time Allie ever spoke to Eileen.
Now, it's very important to note here that the following description of events comes from Christina, and she certainly has reasons to slant the truth one way or another. So again, as we go through this, remain skeptical of what she says happened. But Christina and Zach went out to fish while Eileen stayed behind in the room. Christina kept getting her hook stuck on the rocks, and Zach helped her get it off. Then Eileen came out just wearing a bra and panties. Thinking she was intoxicated, Zach and Christina argued about who would deal with her. Eventually, Christina relented and helped Eileen back inside where she sat on the bed. Christina told her they could take a nap together, but Eileen refused, and that was right when Zach walked in. Then Eileen turned to Christina and said, "Guess what?" While it's unknown why Zach responded this way, he jumped to his feet and hit Eileen. Now, this next description is very graphic, for a warning, but what followed was a very brutal beating of Eileen. And while Christina said that Zach was the main perpetrator of the violence, she admitted to hitting Eileen as well after she asked her what Eileen was going to say. The beating got so bad that Christina left the room to call Zach's mom, although she was unable to reach her. Also, were unable to find a source that verifies that this call ever took place or that she left the room. And when Christina returned to the room, Zach was still beating Eileen, who is now lying naked in the bathtub. Eileen eventually walked out of the bathroom, but Zach was still enraged. He broke a walking stick across her back and used it to sexually assault her. Christina grabbed the stick and threw it outside. She then handed him a wooden paddle they had purchased at the dollar store because, according to Christina, it'd be, quote, less painful for her. Eventually, Christina got in between the two of them and ended the assault. Zach pushed her to the ground and urinated on both of them before he went to sleep. When Christina went to sleep, it seemed like Eileen was still alive. However, when Christina woke up before daybreak, she realized that Eileen Seiden had been killed during the assault. Panicked, she woke up Zach, and the two of them quickly cleaned the room using vinegar. Because, of course, there is blood absolutely everywhere. Eileen was basically bludgeoned to death. Zach took the light bulb of the outside patio section so that it would stay dark, and then snuck Eileen's lifeless body to their car, where she was sat upright with the seatbelt pulled across her body. And then they drove to a cul-de-sac in an unfinished neighborhood and then just dumped Eileen's body and drove off. Which, that is just pure evil on both of them.
Right. And
horrible.
Like, again, that description is coming from Christina, who is giving the description to try to, you know, lessen the blame on her end. And yet she's still saying that she hit Eileen, that she provided a paddle because it would be less painful than the walking stick. I mean, the level of brutality involved in this assault, I think the fact that even her confession, you know, of it, which is supposed to make her look better, is still brutal and still incriminates her, just shows how awful this was.
Yeah. Well, and like, this may not even be what happened at all.
Right.
That's the thing about it. We have no idea what happened in room 15, because this is the only way we know anything happened is because of Christina's version of events. But for all we know, Christina could have did all of it.
Right.
Or Zach could have jumped in after the fact, after Christina attacked her. I mean, we have no idea exactly what went on here. All we know is that Eileen was brutally beaten to death and left to die and succumbed to her wounds overnight. As far as we know, I mean, for all we know, it may have ended earlier than that, but just torturous, a torturous death.
So on the morning of April 23rd, 2018, an older couple, Christopher and April Russell, had just returned to the mainland from a fishing trip to St. George's Island. They were going to check out another secluded fishing spot when they spotted what Christopher thought was a junk pile. He went to inspect it, hoping to find something worth keeping. Instead, he came across the badly beaten body of Eileen Seiden. He immediately called the police, and he and April both wished that maybe she was alive somehow, or was drunk and hit by a car. Nothing could prepare them or the police for the truth of the situation. Lieutenant Ronnie Jones was among the first to arrive at the scene. And as Eileen had left her wallet and phone behind in Miami without any form of identification, she became a Jane Doe. On top of that, Lieutenant Jones had no idea who the killer or killers were. At first, he was struck by the brutality of the murder. He called it overkill. Like, it was just horrible. Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Anthony Clark would later say that Eileen's body looked like the kind of thing I see in motor vehicle crashes. All the ribs on her left side were broken, and most of her body had been badly bruised. It looked as though all the injuries were caused by blunt force trauma.
That's saying a lot right there.
Right. It looked like the kind of thing I see in car crashes. Like, that's ridiculous.
Which to me suggests that both of them relentlessly beat Eileen for a long period of time.
Right. So Lieutenant Jones at this point was worried that the murderer could still be within East Point and looking to strike again. But less than 24 hours later, he received another call about an additional crime scene at the Sportsman's Lodge Hotel. Hotel staff had discovered a large bloodstain while stripping the beds and alerted police after that it was determined that the room's occupants had actually left early, though they had settled up their account. They were all paid for. Lieutenant Jones immediately noticed the bed and found that the entire area was covered in bloodstains. He immediately recalled the body from the previous day and connected the two scenes due to the severity of the injuries. He also noticed a strong vinegar scent in the room, indicating that someone had tried to clean up. Luminol testing revealed that the entire bathroom was covered in blood. Additional blood stains and prints on the shower curtain rod indicated that it could have been used as a weapon. And Lieutenant Jones's suspicions were correct. The blood in both scenes was a match. While the identity of the victim was not made public yet, Eileen's family was the first to know about what tragically happened to their sister. Eileen's older sister, Deborah, said, "My heart is broken. I'm devastated, especially with the way she died. My sister didn't deserve this." Francesca said, "My sister was murdered. What do? You look for support. That's all I could do. I didn't understand why it was given to me again to handle another loss." However, while Eileen's identity wasn't made public for a few more days, investigators still searched for the people who did this. Luckily, an old friend was about to turn them in.
Right after Christina and Zach drove away from East Point, they planned to find a nearby cruise ship and get on board using his passport. And once the boat stops somewhere overseas, they're just going to hop off and then never return. This was their grand escape plan after this. Brilliant plan, by the way. However, the only cruise ships leaving that day were out of Miami, which was nowhere near where they were. Instead, last minute, Zach decided to drive to their old buddy Mike's house in Broward County because he knew that Mike owned a boat, and he was hoping that he could convince his buddy to just hop on their boat and take him where. That's what I want to know. Right. It's like, how far, what, to Cuba or something?
Yeah.
On his little boat? Like, come on.
Like, you want to drive a couple hundred miles or boat us a couple hundred miles out of the country? We're not going to tell you why, but we need to leave right now.
Yeah. You're just going to be an accomplice in this?
Like, right.
No. Zach explained to Christina that Mike owed him a favor and that he would take him out of the country on his boat, supposedly. Of course, Mike had no idea what was going on when they showed up. On April 24th, Mike was alone in Fort Lauderdale when he got a knock on his door, and sure enough, it was Zach Abel and Christina Araujo. Mike immediately noticed that Eileen wasn't with them, which obviously he knew something's up, what's going on here? And he actually asked, "Where's Eileen?" And Christina responded, "Oh, she ran away." Mike said, "Bullshit, where is she?" And Zach choked up before he said, "She's dead." It kind of was like Mike knew something bad had happened because he had seen all the shit that had happened over the years. But after the couple settled into Mike's place, Zach took him onto the patio when they were out of earshot of Christina, and Zach told him a different version of events. Here's what Zach said. He said that Christina killed Eileen while he was sleeping. He wanted to call 911, but Christina wouldn't allow it. Mike said he would call the authorities, but Zach said no, since he wanted to protect Christina, which why on earth, if that was remotely true, would he care about saving Christina at this point?
Right. You killed our girlfriend while I was asleep, and now you're just dragging me along. Like, why? I don't know. Why wouldn't you just call the authorities?
Right. Mike said, "What do you got to protect her for? Because what the hell, if that's actually what happened, why wouldn't she be like, we should leave, get the cops over here ASAP while she's sleeping and arrest her?" But what's also interesting is that Mike also, for some reason, doesn't call 911 when they show up and Zach confesses that Eileen's dead because he feared that a violent outcome, and maybe it's a violent outcome against himself, possibly.
Right.
He thought, if I just call the cops right now, they could kill me as well. So I'm guessing that that's why he didn't do it. He didn't want to kind of tip them off. So the only thing that he could think of was to call Christina's father, Colonel Tony Araujo. right before he went online to search for Tony's information, he snapped this photo of Zach and Christina, which is them feet to feet on his couch, passed out or sleeping with what looks like pool towels. Mike would later claim that the marks on Christina's feet and hands proved that she was the primary aggressor in Eileen's death. When Mike finally found Tony's information, he didn't immediately tell him about the situation. All Mike said was, "I got to talk to you. It's about Christina." Tony told him to meet at a gas station to explain what on earth he was talking about. So they went to this gas station and met up. And finally, Mike told Tony, "Christina killed somebody." And Tony responded, "You know I'm a cop, right?" And Mike said that he did, of course. And that's when Tony took Mike to the sheriff's office where he made a formal statement. Mike even commented that Tony was very professional about the whole ordeal and immediately brought in two other investigators to start asking Mike questions.
Which I think is important to note. Like,
right.
Christina's story is like, "Oh, my dad will get me out of trouble." It's like, no, when rubber meets the road, like, her dad is following procedures. He's not getting directly involved. He's being very, very professional and just like, a decent cop at all this.
Yeah, handled it perfectly, exactly how he should have. Immediately tell other people in the department about what's going on, have Mike give a statement, talk to the detectives. There's no attempts made to try to save his daughter
right.
from this whatsoever. Mike was then shown a photo of Eileen's body, and he was the one to identify Eileen formally. And with that, police then showed up at Mike's home and arrested Zach Abel and Christina Araujo on April 24, 2018. Eileen's identity was publicly revealed on the 27th. But still, as they both awaited trial in Apalachicola on original charges of first-degree murder, it would take nearly 6 years before they faced a jury. 6 years. Long, long time. And by that point, Christina took a plea deal for second-degree murder if she worked with the state in convicting Zach. He, meanwhile, maintained that Christina was the primary aggressor in the murder. The trial began in mid-January 2024, so not all that long ago, and the prosecution mainly relied on Christina's version of events and her unwillingness to testify against Zach, claiming he was the primary aggressor. However, Zach's attorney, Alex Morris, claimed that as the main perpetrator of the murder, Christina was, quote, "manipulative, cunning, a chameleon. I think there's evil in her." He believed that Christina acted alone in the murder and only told Zach once he woke up. So that's what the defense was trying to go with, that story. But Mike testified for the defense, displaying the photo he claimed showed injuries and bruising on Christina's feet and hands, defensive wounds, basically, or, you know, aggressor wounds, really. But in the fight, Eileen messed her up pretty good. Alex also claimed that Christina's 150 texts read like a confession. One of them plainly states, "You come near me, ho, I will kill you." That's pretty clear. Even though Zach's palm print was found on the shower rod, Alex claimed it got there while they were cleaning up the room, and also that Christina's print was already wiped up. He also showed this photo taken while they were driving out of East Point. It's a picture of them in the vehicle, a Honda Civic, it looks like, and you can see Zach in the passenger seat and Christina in the driver's seat. Alex argued that Christina was in control of the situation because she was the one driving the vehicle, which I guess it's worth a shot, but doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. To me, what I think is like they just committed a murder and they're, again, as we know from earlier in the road trip, Zach didn't have his driver's license with him. So I think really what this is that it's like, okay, Christina has to drive because we're already like on the run. We can't get found out for also driving without a license.
Right.
Like, just trying to cross all their I's.
Yeah. However, the prosecuting attorney, James Patterson, didn't buy this version of events at all. He said they acted together as co-conspirators because, quote, "they lived together, they worked together, they own a business together, they went to the Sportsman Lodge together, and they emptied out the room together. They ran away together, they got arrested together. The only thing they didn't do together was kill Eileen Seiden." No way. I agree.
Yeah.
There's no way. They did literally everything together. They cleaned the scene together. This wasn't just like, and again, what if that were true, if Zach really just woke up after Christina had murdered Eileen, why on earth did he not get out of there and go straight to the police to make sure that he gets there first?
Right.
And the police know that I did not do this. That didn't happen. No, no, no. He participated. He helped clean up. He helped move the body. He's involved 1,000%. There's no way you can even make a case for that. The prosecution's case mainly rested on Christina's testimony. her story of the murder, which is how we piece together the event for the episode, which is absolutely horrifying and just completely brutal. Here she is during her testimony crying while explaining the injuries on Eileen's face and body. Let's take a look. Here she is on the stand.
Marks or injuries on her?
Yes.
Where?
Her face. Her eyes were water swollen. Her eyes were cold shut. She had bruising already on her face, scratches on her face.
I just don't really... I mean, I could understand perhaps, like, it's been 6 years. She's had time to think about the horrible shit she did. I could see that being a genuine show of emotions, but I also just can't get over the fact that, like, she's trying to slant this so that Zach is the horrible guy in the situation.
Right.
And she contributed, but not to the level that Zach did. And so I can't really buy anything she's saying.
No, and I really don't feel bad for her at all.
No.
I'm not buying the tears. You're upset because you're caught and now in an orange jumpsuit is what right. It is. But eventually, Zach Abel was found guilty of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison in Florida as well, which is no joke because no parole.
Parole? He's there forever.
He's in for life. While he did not testify during the trial, he did speak up during his sentencing and told the story of proposing to Eileen with a ring pop, which is just to the family at that point. Like, why are you even saying shit like that? He's just trying to save himself. And he kind of like coughed up a few tears to try to be like, yeah, you know, I'm not a bad guy, basically, is what he's trying to do. But obviously, very few people bought this. It just infuriated Eileen's family members. They're just like, fuck this guy. He still professes his innocence, though, and is trying to get an appeal. Mike still believes that his friend is innocent of the murder, which is interesting. And I don't know.
I think it's
kind of questioned Mike a little bit.
Yeah, I do. I think Mike's heart is in the good place, but I think, again, it speaks back to their earlier dynamic where, like, they're boys, and he was basically just letting Zach get away with anything. And
right.
Being like, he's my friend, I got to defend him, yada. I think that's still kind of operating on that dynamic.
Or he just hates Christina that much.
Right.
That he's just kind of turning a blind eye to what Zach did and just kind of in his mind putting this all on Christina.
Right.
Which Christina, on the other hand, did not get life in prison, which was surprising to me and unfair in my opinion. She got 25 years, though, for second degree murder. So she'll actually be 63 when she's released. So she'll be getting out of prison.
Right.
With, you know, some years to spare at the end of her life, as opposed to Zach. He will never be released unless he's able to win an appeal. But to me, that doesn't seem very fair whatsoever. But let's actually hear a little bit from Christina's father, Tony, because he actually spoke up during the sentencing to set the record straight about all the shit Christina was saying about him out there. Here's what he had to say.
You will own up to the truth. You will accept responsibility. You will be the voice of the victim. And you will testify under oath in a court of law. And then whatever is sentenced to you, that's fine.
He has no idea that his daughter has been telling everyone in the world, like, yeah, fucking, he'll get me out. So he's like, shit. Like, I really do, like, not only did my daughter commit this horrible act, but she's been lying on my name and tarnishing my reputation for the whole state, really.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's definitely... I think it's good that he got out there and was like, fucking this.
Yeah,
this is
accept
what's real.
Your punishment
right.
for what you did. And he also specified that contrary to her claims, he has never used his influence in law enforcement to help Christina avoid any sort of legal consequences whatsoever. So, yeah, that was just stupid, man. It's like, what are you doing? Eileen's best friend, who we've been referring to as Allie, actually passed away in January 2025 at the age of 42, which is just another devastating loss for their family. But finally, you know, let's check in on Francesca, because Francesca, I mean, what she has had to go through in her life is so much. I mean, it's more than most of us can even begin to fathom. I mean, she lost her mom as a kid. She lost her dad when she was 22. And then she had to raise her 14-year-old sister. I mean, while working, going to school, it's extremely impressive. But then to have to go through this and lose her sister in such a horrible and tragic way is just unreal. But she still runs her art company in Los Angeles. She wants her sister to be remembered as sweet and a loving human being. who unfortunately lost her parents at a young age, but she was still so sweet. She was such a sweetheart and her soul was so kind. Just got involved with the wrong people, evil people, in my opinion, that have major issues. And it's unfortunate that I believe Christina should have received a life sentence as well. Same as Zach. I don't think there's any way to discern who was the primary aggressor here. So I say you charge them as both. I see why the prosecution did what they did, went for the plea deal with her to try to make a stronger case for Zach. So ultimately, I'm happy there was justice served in this case, but obviously that doesn't bring anybody back. And it's just a horrible situation, man. Very sad. I mean, they literally tortured her to death is what right. They did. They full on just went at her for a long period of time till she just succumbed to her wounds at some point, which is horrible to even think about. I hope that Francesca, you know, is in a hopefully a better place, has found some peace and joy in her life after all of this, and that she's doing okay, as well as the rest of her sisters and her family. With cases like this, I think it's always important to mention that there are a lot of resources available for those affected by domestic violence, including hotlines, there's shelters and support services right there in your local community. You just have to look for them. But a great place to start is the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233, where you can get immediate assistance. But of course, there's local resources available as well as shelter options. But yeah, very, very tragic, tragic story. Heart goes out to Eileen's family. And yeah, let us know your thoughts on this one. But thank you for being here and supporting this show. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week with another one. Ian and I will be back.
We'll be back. Yeah, this is the dream team for a second here.
Yeah, it'll be an all boys episode.
It will be,
but it's a very interesting case. I think it's a good one, an unexplained one,
right?
Similar to
Dial
of Pass. Yeah. So we'll see you guys next week. Keep on taking your mind a mile higher.